Now playing movie reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, I'm not Johnny Cash. And welcome to the podcast Movie Reviews in 20 Qs, the show where we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. I am joined by my vision of Eternity 2 because of the only 10s that I see, one of which is Stacey. Hey, Stacey, how you doing?
Hey, that's one of the best intros we've had so far.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me, by far.
I didn't say it was a positive or a negative 10, so you might want to hold your breath there for a second.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
And then he just takes it right back.
I was so excited.
You're also another 10 I see through the magic of the computers. Hello, Liz, how are you?
I'm super excited, really energetic. Couldn't be happier to be here chatting to some of my besties.
Thanks, Liz. Anywho, let's get back to why we're here, which is reviewing the film Walk the Line, as you guys can tell by the name of this episode. As we've been doing recently, we sort of do flashback episodes for movies that came out maybe 10, 15, 20, 25, whatever years ago. And Walk the Line is celebrating a 15th anniversary. It's turning 15 on the 20th of November.
Wow.
So you might be listening to this on the day that Walk the Line has been out for 15 years. It was pretty much a choice between this and a whole bunch of other films that no one's heard of and Home Alone. And
I was never going to agree to Home Alone. Not that I don't like Macaulay Culkin, but I'm not really a kids movie person. Or a kids person.
Oh.
I quite like babies.
Let's leave it at that. Let's leave it at that. We can use that. Liz isn't really a kids person.
No.
Anyway, back to the film. As I said, it came out in 1995, has a score of 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, has a 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, stars Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash, Reese Witherspoon as June Carter, then June Carter Cash, Jennifer Goodwin as Vivian Cash, Robert Patrick as Ray Cash, and there's no one else of really any name or note in this film. Has a budget of $28 million, had a cumulative worldwide gross of $186 million, or nearly $187. Won a couple of Oscars. Reese Witherspoon won for lead actress, and I believe they also won for... No, they didn't. Ooh, shit, that's right. I've got something to say about that later that's going to piss me off when I saw it. The general plot of the film, yeah, I mean, it's just the life and story of Johnny Cash. That's pretty much it, right? His rise from a, like a dude in the Air Force to basically becoming the greatest or the most popular country singer of all time?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I know it's called a biopic. To me, it was more just a romance about that specific relationship between him and June. Like, that was really the focus from the beginning to the end.
How do you know that wasn't the focus of his life?
Well, I mean, clearly like it was.
Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, though, that's the general plot. It shows the rise of him from nobody into Mr. Popular, into cheating on his wife, into shacking up with June Carter Cash, and that's the end of the film, really.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Cool. We can use that. If you haven't heard this podcast before, what we do, as I mentioned, is we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. We start with 10 that can be applied to any film. We then move into three personal questions each before finishing on a listener question. And the one that we always start with is the compliment sandwich, which is one thing good, one thing bad, and one thing good about this film, if we're giving it a score over 5,000. Now, Stacey, I'm going to go to you first. I know you don't want to go first, but I'm giving it to you first because, little known fact, listeners, this is the film, aside from Wizard of Oz, that Stacey has seen the most times in her life.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. I've probably watched this, I don't know, at least 15 times, which is ridiculous.
That is insane. You haven't even watched, like, most movies you don't even watch twice.
Exactly.
Let alone three times. 15, this is fucking unreal.
I don't know. I love it. I love this movie. So,
you start us off, Miss Queen. Are you going to give it a hyperbole sandwich?
I think I might because
I can't think
of anything bad about
Hot dog.
To be honest.
Holy shit. I was wondering for the day you would get a hyperbole sandwich. I think you probably would have given Wizard of Oz one if you had the chance. But let's hear it. Let's hear it.
It's just so obvious. Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon smash it out of the park. They are the best choice for these roles, and they do an awesome job.
Not only were they the best choice, they were handpicked by Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash before they
really?
Died.
Yeah, even better.
That's cool.
I didn't know that, and I thought they were perfect.
Mm. Yeah.
I just find the story so emotionally gripping, which is unusual for me, but there's so many elements, so many things going on between the relationships, right from when he was a kid with his brother who died, his relationship with his father, his mother, his whole family, and then going into the music industry, the relationship with Vivian, his first wife, and then obviously June throughout his whole performing career. I just loved it. I just thought it was so rich.
Yeah.
Is it because it's a true story? Do you think that matters?
Yeah, I think it makes it better, definitely. Yeah.
It was based on two of his autobiographies, which he authorized the printing and writing on.
Which is really cool because a lot of biopics aren't really authorized, or they deviate quite a lot from the real story. And my final good thing is the music. It's awesome and it's so well woven into the story.
Yeah, definitely. Some good sets in there.
He's always been identified as the guy that even if you aren't into country music, you still like his music. And I think that's a great, I mean, I don't like another country and Western sort of artist at all that I can think of.
I never really thought of him as even being country until you like read the blurb of the story and go, oh yeah, I suppose he is country, but it transcends for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, as a score out of 10,000 guitars?
10,000.
Go, this is hyperbole. You've got
to go over. More.
Oh,
I know.
I'm going to point out the record is 1.87 billion guitars.
You can't go over 100%.
Yes, you can.
I'm sorry.
That's the idea of hyperbole sandwich. Fuck.
For fuck's sake.
Okay.
I knew this was a disaster when you started because I was like, she's going to logically fall out of it. This is where you just go over 10,000. Where you say, fuck the rules.
Listeners, Sam was like fully facepalming at this point.
Okay, well, I will go 20,000.
Excellent.
Good stuff.
There we go. That's nice a good job. Hyperbole sandwich.
Yeah.
You can just go 10,000 if you want.
Oh, now he says this. God, you're full of crap.
I know how hard this is for you.
Yeah.
Men are the worst.
Yeah. Hey, I don't make up the I do make up the rules.
Yeah, you do.
This is great.
All right, Liz, why don't you tell us your compliment sandwich?
Hi, Stacey, I shall. And in fact, it is a compliment sandwich. I'll start out with that.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, my first good thing is the amazing chemistry between the leads. Like, I really bought it and they had such good moments. I did read an article that was saying that they didn't even like each other that much at the start and their relationship kind of blossomed over the their friendship kind of blossomed over the making of the movie. But I think they transcended that so well. Like, there was clearly something between them from the beginning, and the way it builds and stuff, just it was so well done. My bad thing was that it was just way, way too long. Like, I just couldn't stay focused. I really feel like it could have cut out like half an hour and it would have been as, you know, meaningful and emotional. But I could have, you know, gone to sleep half an hour earlier.
So did you watch the extended edition?
I did.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, so, I don't think it needed to be extended. Yeah. There was just
some things do need to be extended, Liz.
Well, I'm surprised you even know what that is, Sam, because I wouldn't think that you'd. No, I don't even know what I'm trying to say there, but you know what I'm trying to say. And my final thing is June. Loved the story. Loved how they sort of portrayed her sympathetically. But I just think it would have been this really depressing movie if she wasn't such a key factor of it. You know, if they didn't put so much focus on her as well. Like, yeah, she was just great. And Reese played it beautifully as well. Yeah, so I'm going to give this movie, I know you're going to want me to go over 9,000, Sam. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to give this movie 8,765 guitars.
That's a lot of guitars.
Yeah,
for me,
that's
a pretty good score. Like, it was really just, it was just too long. That was really the only issue I had with it.
Yep, fair enough. My first good thing, you guys have already said it. It's the chemistry and the performances by both Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon. Like, Reese winning an Oscar for lead actress. I mean, yeah, makes sense.
Absolutely. Well,
it makes sense. Like, she is hands down my favorite part of this film. Like, she carries that character and just portrays her with such, I don't know, integrity, sympathy, yet still just single-mindedness, determinedness.
Like, the energy and the charisma. She's just beautiful and brilliant.
I will say as well that I am not the biggest Reese Witherspoon fan. Like, I've never been, like, I've always sort of been sort of a take or leave it when it came to Reese, but this performance is just outstanding for me.
What about Legally Blonde?
I love that movie. I was very disappointed not to do that with you guys. Yeah.
Did enjoy it.
The bad thing for me, like, there isn't too many bad things in this. Like, the film is just so solidly well made that James Mangold is probably one of the most underrated active directors at the moment. That being said, there's quite a lot of side characters that basically just become one-dimensional, have no real rhyme or reason or purpose, you know what I mean? Like, it you're right, like, it does. It becomes a love story between these two characters where what happens to his bands, it doesn't really get explored.
Yeah, like, you don't know anything about the Tennessee 2, and then suddenly it turns into the Tennessee 3, and you're like, I don't even know who the third person is. Oh, yeah, exactly. Is it June? I don't know.
Talking about that, it sort of cuts back to my next good thing. Liz, you seem to say that you got bored. I actually really love the editing in this film. I feel like this film keeps its pace and it never lingers too long on a completely sad note or a completely happy note. It just like it alternates between, you know, different feelings and emotions, and I just really love that. And pissed off, absolutely pissed off. Crash, which has highly been rated as one of the worst films ever win the Best Picture at the Oscars, won for Best Picture. And Crash beat this film for film editing, which I think is fucking unbelievable. Like, if there's a film that should have won for film editing, it was this one. But as a score out of 10,000, yeah, I mean, I'm up there, but I'm not up there. I'm probably like 8,892.
That's a really good score.
Mm. It's somewhere between a 4 to a 4.5 star out of 5 for me. It's just, it's one of those films that, like, I feel like, I've never bothered rewatching it since the first time it came out. Yeah, on the rewatch, I'm like, why the fuck have I ignored this film for so long? It's just so much goodness in it that it's still a very awesome film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, it takes us over to our next question, which is the first of our Patreon questions. If you listened to our episode last week, you would have heard Dan Brennick from Netflix and Swill on to talk about Holidays without Liz. Hey, let's not get into that. But
sad Dan... face. I really wanted to do that movie.
Lies. But Dan's thrown a whole bunch of new questions at us. Well, actually, his partner Ashley has basically told him to pull his head in and come up with some better fucking questions. So what's one of those questions, Stacey?
It's, who's the real MVP of this movie, not a main character?
All right, I'm going with Sam Phillips. I feel like had he not been as good at his job as he was, I mean, there wouldn't be a film. I just really like that scene where, you know, Johnny and the two guys come in and he's just like, ah, gospel, we don't really do that. But he really explains what he's looking for to the point where it actually inspires Johnny Cash to sing the other songs he's written. And he can really pick up that they've got a different sound. I just think that's really impressive. And I loved that scene. So I just think Sam Phillips really nailed it.
Yeah, that was one of the more poignant ones too, where he's just like, if you were hit by a truck and you're dying out on the street, is this really the song that you'd want to sing before God came and took you or whatever? I was like, fuck me.
Such a good way to put it and to get them inspired and wanting to do something really amazing.
Yeah. And it kind of shows you that maybe the music industry at that time wasn't as superficial as it is now. And he was like, I'm really looking for something that's got soul, like got a story behind it.
Yeah, yeah, oh,
there's,
exactly.
There's no way in hell that anybody could just walk in off the street now and go into like Sun Records or Capitol Records and be like, hey man, I've got a song for you to play. It's just like everything else is out there at the moment. No one fucking never happened.
No. And I also don't think they could turn up at a recording studio and have the guy go, yeah, you can record a song. It's $4. Oh, all right, then. I've got a whole album of stuff I could sing.
Oh, fuck, are you serious? Fuck yeah.
For $4, 100%.
The real MVP for me is June's old man when he like pulls a shotgun on his drug dealer at the end.
Oh, yeah, that's sick. It's so good. The wife does too, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think they both do. They just trace the drug dealer off the property and it's like, just like, you know, like they can clearly see that their daughter's in love with this man and they want to do anything to help their daughter, which is just absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, that was my one. What about you, Stace?
Well, I think that Vivian is the real MVP. Yes, you might think that she's, you know, just this naggy wife, but I don't see it like that at all. I see it like she's part of his life before becoming artistic, before chasing his dream and fame and things like that. She's at home with a screaming baby.
This is basically the story of you and Sam, as Sam gets more and more famous from his podcast.
Yes.
And his book.
This is basically it. Once my book goes like viral and people, millions of people the world wide over are like, oh my God, this book's so amazing. This guy's the man. And I'm out there traveling the world. Well, fuck you, COVID. I'm out there virtually traveling the world doing virtual book signings.
From your garage.
My garage. And girls are throwing their like
pens
probably
at
nothing at me. Restraining orders at me. I don't know. Throwing pens at me. There we go. I'll use that. I can see why you sympathise with that character.
It's not only sympathising. It's she provides the reality to this movie. Like he wasn't just born a singer star. No,
the opposite.
At all. And I think seeing his early childhood and seeing he had a normal run-of-the-mill relationship before getting into this world, yeah, really balanced it out. Without that, I think it would have been a loss to the movie.
Yeah, I've got comments on here later, so I'll bite my tongue. Okay, question number 3. Also a Patreon question comes courtesy of Chris Yeni. Fuck you, the man, Chris. What is it, Liz?
All right. What song would you have inserted into this film and where? And by the way, mine is going to blow both of yours out of the water.
We'll see. We'll see. My one would be Blink-182's song, All the Small Things. I'm literally going to use that as an answer on every podcast you're on now, Liz.
No. Never going to be on another podcast. Problem solved.
Nah, there was a biopic film that came out 2 years after this called I'm Not There, which was in different interpretations of Bob Dylan and his life. Cate Blanchett received a fuck ton of praise for playing Bob Dylan in that film. Mm. I would have liked a scene, because he talks about how there's this kid, Bob Dylan, and he really likes his music. We then see them do a cover of Lay Lady Lay. I would have liked almost like a cinematic tie-in where we see Cate Blanchett on the screen playing Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan. Just something like that. I reckon that would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, because we've got a few other famous artists playing their songs. I would have liked to have seen Bobby D.
My answer is kind of inspired by your answer, actually, and it's a Rolling Stones song.
Ooh.
Wild Horses.
Oh, I love that song.
Good. Wouldn't Drag Me Away. That kind of sums up, you know, June and John in the end, really.
Where'd you get the inspiration for this, Stacey?
Listeners, this is clearly some sort of private joke that we're not privy to.
We randomly started watching YouTube videos of June Carter Cash today to see what she was like, to see how much Reese Witherspoon nailed her. And for some reason went from a June Carter Cash video to a Susan Boyle video in which Susan Boyle sung Wild Horses. So I'm like,
But it works, right?
Okay, yeah, it does work. Yes.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good song. Oh, it's a great song, actually. Yeah, mine's a bit more like Sam's maybe, but I would go with Buddy Holly's song, It's So Easy to Fall in Love. I don't know why he wasn't a feature in the movie, because he was the same sort of time and the people and everything, but he wasn't. He's brilliant. I love his music. I love It's So Easy to Fall in Love, and I think it would have been perfect to have him playing it on stage while they showed Johnny Cash and June in the background chatting, you know, while they're waiting for their sets, because that would have been such a great tie-in together.
Oh, that's romantic. Yeah.
Isn't it? It would have been amazing.
Very sweet.
Yes. Very sweet. And that's why I win this question.
Sure. Moves it over to our next Patreon question. Comes courtesy of Dave Baker. Dave is also the man. He's got his own Patreon at patreon.com/yourfavorite. Find a link down in the show notes. On it, he posts a ton of awesome content you guys should all go check out. And what Dave would like to know is, which two characters from this film would you like at your house party? Now, this is interesting because we can legitimately pick real people this time, so we can know what it would be like.
I guess
we
so.
We can.
Get in our own interpretations of what those people are like. But anyway, what do you got to say?
Okay, well, I'm going to pick June and Elvis.
Yeah, makes sense. June's funny. Elvis might shit himself and die on the toilet, but...
Not for quite some time, though.
Exactly.
You're talking about young Elvis.
Young Elvis,
yeah.
From this movie.
I wouldn't be surprised if we all picked June, because I picked June, because June's
I don't
awesome.
Have June.
Really? Because I struggled to pick anyone other than June. I was like, June 100%, she is definitely there. I would love her there. But in the end, I went with the Tennessee 2 guitarist guy, because all the guys were kind of douchey. Like, I was just like, I don't really want to hang out with any of these people. He seemed actually quite reasonable compared to the rest. Yeah. So I was like, you seem right. You can play the guitar, you know.
Given his level of infatuation, there's no way in hell I'm picking June Carter Cash and then not picking Johnny Cash, basically. Because, I mean, you pick June Carter Cash, you're going to get Johnny Cash without even choosing
him. No, I'm going to lock the gates and he cannot come in. He can go see his drug dealer.
Yeah.
Well, talking about drugs, that's why I picked Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash, man. To go, like, to be able to say I went out on the piss with those two guys, fuck, you'd be a legend. You'd have some fucking stories.
100%, yeah.
They'd probably find me, like, halfway down the freeway with my liver hanging out, but, I mean, I would have loved it. I've probably had a good time.
Yeah, you would have.
Anywho, next question. What is it, Stace?
Okay, so our next question is courtesy of our wonderful Patreon Julio from the Contrarians podcast. And he would like to know, what is your most controversial opinion about this film?
Let's do a little plug for The Contrarians, because very awesomely, Julio's actually got a copy of my book now, and he's now reading. He was one of the very first people to buy my book. You're the fucking man, Julio.
I was the first person to read your book.
Oh, Stacey was.
I was.
Oh, okay, that's true.
Actually, a book editor in England was the first person to read it.
Yeah, but I was the first person to read it as it stands now.
Well, even then, I've made some changes since you've edited it. So.
Rude.
Okay. All right. What's your answer?
What's the question?
I'm totally off track. But yeah, if you haven't started listening to The Contrarians already, do yourself a favor and do it. They break down a movie, usually one that's universally beloved or universally hated, and they basically sort of go to bat for why it's shit. So So yeah, so like a film like this, I'd basically spend the whole time arguing why it's rubbish and then offer their, you know, true opinions at the end. Anyway.
Okay, so I have one very specific controversial opinion, and it is that they should have been kinder in their depiction of his first wife, Vivian.
Yes.
Yeah, it just,
I agree.
When you actually go back and read the story, the kids were a bit sad that they didn't show the good moments. And I think they needed to have a couple of good moments, because all they showed was just her being this harping shrew. And I was like, I'm sure it wasn't that bad the whole time.
It's funny you say that, because my controversial opinion is that no one deserves to be treated like shit. But like, the wife in this just doesn't help your cause. You know, like the entire time she's just perpetually moaning, nagging and all that sort of stuff.
And I think in the movie... Yeah, in the movie,
yes, that's what
but
I'm saying.
But I don't think, I'm sure she wasn't that one-dimensional in real life. I'm sure that, you know, she was just trying to do her best, and he's the one that kept popping out kids with her.
Exactly,
yeah. There must be something there for her to stay with him for that amount of time.
Well, divorce, like,
she would have been
so
together like 12
right?
years or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, if, I mean, honestly, if we had a question about the philosophical debate, mine was going to be, this movie really showed me why it's good that divorce is so much more commonplace now, because some people just... think they're meant to be, and they are just not.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So my controversial opinion is that Joaquin Phoenix should have won the Oscar for Best Actor, and Walk the Line should have won the Best Picture Oscar.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's no way Crash should have won the Best Picture Oscar. It's fucking garbage.
His performance was excellent. Like, just all his mannerisms and the way he approached the character, and really. Even just the way he sang and stuff was so well done. Like, I was really impressed with that.
He got beaten by Philip Seymour Hoffman in Capote.
Oh, well, that's a bit cool then, because that is an excellent film.
Exactly.
That's why that's controversial.
That's why it's controversial. I have seen that movie, Capote. Yeah, I've seen both films, and I still think that Joaquin should have won.
Cool. Okay, question number six. Also, a Patreon question comes courtesy of who there, Liz?
Oh, one of the most amazing podcasters out there is Emily Higgins. She has a spectacular podcast called The Tasteless Podcast, where she compares two films, one that's like amazingly beloved, and then one that Emily likes and actually thinks is better, and she explains why she thinks that. Most of the time she's got some great ideas. Still disagree with
great ideas. Yeah, it's a great idea. I'll definitely say that about you.
Yeah, she's amazing. And what she'd like to know is, what side character would have the best spin-off movie?
I think we need to see more about June Carter, like pre meeting Johnny. You know, so she grew up in a musical performing family, right? From her early days, and she says she's not even the best singer. They only bring her out because she's funny. So. Be interesting to see what the rest of her family are like.
Yeah.
I went with Sam Phillips because I just thought he'd, you know, I mean, he'd signed Elvis and then he signed Johnny Cash. Who else did he? Would have been
Carl Perkins,
fun.
Julie Lewis. He signed them all around the same time.
Yeah.
They recorded albums at Sun Records.
Well, that would be pretty
50s.
Cool. Like a whole movie about Sun Records.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be cool. How about I ask my favourite question?
Oh, yeah. That moves over to question number 7, which I have fucked up the order. I was supposed to give this to Stacey to ask, but. Asking it, so Stacey, you can ask it anyway. It's the Stacey question. As you guys heard last episode, it's back. What does it say?
How would you have incorporated Nicolas Cage into this film, Liz?
I would have had Nicolas Cage.
What do you mean?
I think we know that I wouldn't have had him too far at the front. I've decided that he could be a prisoner at Folsom. He'd just be right at the front of the crowd, like stamping away when Johnny Cash is playing, and then afterwards he could get involved in a prison riot and die.
Okay, that's a good role for him. I endorse that. What do you think, Sam?
I would have had him play, in a weird, twisted sense of logic, I would have had him play Elvis Presley. Then he would have played his future father-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
Because he married Lisa Marie Presley.
I forgot that he'd done that.
Well, future deceased father-in-law, I should say. But yeah,
that he would have got married had he played that role. That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
No, I think they were either still married. No, they might have been divorced by that point. So he could have like totally done it as a fuck you and just made him look like a complete piece of shit.
But he would have been too old.
Yes, to play
Nicolas Cage
young.
In 2005 playing a young Elvis Presley. You're telling me Nicolas Cage, who played a hot young couple desperately trying to have a kid in Inception in 2017. Come on, Liz, man. The range this man is capable of.
It's truly astounding, the films that he's managed.
They could just de-age him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
CGI does wonderful things. What about you, Stace?
I would have had him as my lover.
Okay. He could be the bank teller when Johnny goes to cash his check.
Yeah, and like get really angry at him when Johnny's like going, "Can't you just cash it, man?" And he's just like, "No, get the fuck out of my bed."
Exactly.
That'd be better.
Bring a bit of comic relief to the situation.
Nice. Yeah,
that works. Next question is also a Patreon question. Comes courtesy of Nick Haskins of Nikolai's Kitchen, brand new podcast about all things cooking related. And Nick and his adventures in food. That sounds really creepily sexy, and maybe it is. I haven't listened
yet. It is.
It's creepily sexy.
No.
It's not creepily.
It's sexy.
Well, he's pretty sexy.
Well, I was thinking of food in general.
So you find food sexy? I'm not surprised by that comment whatsoever.
It's totally fine if you want to finish up the podcast and go and put whipped cream on each other and stuff. I just don't want to hear about it, and please don't do it on the screen.
No.
We do have an unfinished plate of coleslaw sitting right beside Stacey at the moment.
That's quite what I was thinking, but hey, you do.
Chicken and some lettuce. That looks pretty.
It's wilting.
Okay. How about we move on to the next question?
Yeah, so anyway, the next question.
What is his question?
Anyway, the question is, how could this film have been rewritten into a Shakespearean comedy or a tragedy?
I'm going with tragedy. And I think that June should ask him to get clean, but instead he just hits the drugs more, and it actually destroys his abilities to sing, and maybe gets wiped out and ends up he can't tour anymore because he's in a wheelchair or something. And he watches as June marries a singer who doesn't do drugs but is super famous and still touring, and they go off and have lots of lovely babies and concerts together.
And that singer is Justin Bieber.
Again, a little out of date, out of the time range. But
and that singer is Elton John.
That would be a tragedy, Liz. I agree with you.
I mean, this kind of film already is a tragedy.
The whole point is they're going to get together in the end, and then they're building to that and they're working together. So to make it a tragedy, you don't ever let him have her, but he's still desperately in love with her, but he fucks it up himself and see you later.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if we are rewriting history a little bit, then my tragedy would have been that his brother haunted him, legitimately haunted him. We see the way his brother, the memory of his brother haunted him and his dad, but I mean legitimately haunted him, and that was the reason why he couldn't fight all these demons. And even when he got clean at the end, when he was on the stage with June, we just see his brother in the background the wrong brother died.
That would be sad.
That'd be horrific.
It would be. I couldn't even watch that scene in the movie. Too, it was just upsetting.
Stacey never has any visceral reactions to any movies except for, "Why are you making me watch this shit?" And she had a very big reaction to, "I can't watch this.
It's
I can't
sad.
Watch
it."
It is.
Yeah, but
it
she is. Never gets, she has no emotional investment in movies while watching them.
I think it's especially sad because he might have been okay if it had happened now. Modern medicine, probably not in the US, but if it had happened in New Zealand now, then he might have actually got some medical care.
Anywhere else in the world.
He could have caught an ambulance for less than $2,000.
True.
Yeah.
Mine was a bit more simple and cutthroat. Is that just John overdosed and that was that?
Just done.
Yeah. So done-zo. He would never have written and recorded his most famous album, and obviously would never have got together with June. So life cut too short.
Well, what about comedies? Can none of us think in a cheerful manner? Is no,
no
one an optimist
funny.
Here? I think for it to be a comedy, you could have just got rid of his brother dying and his drugs, and then it probably would have been all right.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been you could easily reshoot this as a romantic comedy where he's having a whole bunch of mishaps or a super bad or a knocked up. He has a whole bunch of these mishaps on the way to trying to score his dream woman. He's like, "Oh shit, I've done a bit too much drugs. Oh well, next. Oh shit, I have to cheat on my wife again. How do you make this a comedy?"
No, well,
oh, bro, you fucked up again, bro. I know I had a threesome with these two girls last night. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
Just let him go.
How you make this a comedy is you... It's
take
like
out all the good shit.
No, it's a Sliding Doors moment when he meets June.
How do you know what Sliding Doors is?
Who doesn't know what Sliding Doors is? Exactly. I haven't even seen it and I know what Sliding Doors is.
How do you know what Sliding Doors is?
Because
what the fuck is going on?
We're allowed to understand concepts. Fuck off.
You don't even know who Christopher Nolan was. How do you know what Sliding Doors is?
Totally different concept here.
Okay, how we could turn this movie into a comedy is by having a Sliding Doors moment when he first meets June. She comes on stage and she is the comedy. She's a comedy act, right?
True.
So he could have met her and then their lives could have taken that turn at that point, you know, being a more happy, Christian, clappy, you know, type of relationship in life, you know?
Yep.
I think if his brother hadn't died, that would have turned the entire thing around because he might not have joined the Air Force or, you know, then married Vivian or whatever. You know, he wouldn't have got all caught up in drugs. So
it's true. Yeah,
I feel like that would have been the one thing.
That's an answer. Who's over to question number 9? What do you got there, Liz?
All right, it's a listener favourite. What quote from this film would be the worst thing to hear just after you finish having sex?
Yeah, my one, there's basically a scene in which June Carter Cash is... they've just had their massive falling out after Thanksgiving and they're sort of like having a massive argument outside of his lakeside house, I guess. And she basically says, start loving yourself so we can go back to work. I don't want to hear that straight after. I need a little bit of a recharge time. Like,
you're not getting any younger, Sam.
No way. Give me at least a week. What are we talking about?
Certainly not my sex life.
Oh, dear. Okay, so mine is also a June Carter quote, and it is, oh, please, get up off your knees, you look pathetic.
That is fucking cold. Get up off your knees, you look pathetic.
Well, I didn't pick a June Carter one.
I need to write that down.
Yeah. I went with one from Man of the Hour, Jerry Lee Lewis, and it is, don't think about touching it, don't sing about touching it, don't think about sinning about touching it.
I like that.
Yeah,
that's good.
You'd be like, okay, but like I just did, so
yeah,
is that bad? Or clearly I didn't do a good job, so I won't be touching it. Awesome.
We're going to hell.
Touching it. Yeah. We are going to hell. Yep.
Anywho, moves us down to our last question that could be applied to any film, which is, what was the biggest dick move of the movie? And God, there's a lot.
There are a lot. I can't. It's hard for me to narrow it down, to be honest.
I just went with Johnny shoving June in Viv's face, like, multiple times. Like, just, hey, look, I fucking love this other woman. I don't care that you're my wife. She's there and I'm going to sing with her and gaze at her and run off to her whenever you want. And then I'm going to stick photos of her up on my fucking wall. What a douche.
Yeah, that the photos on the wall. Oh. Yeah, I was about to say, like,
so unnecessary.
Most of the other stuff came from the, like, on-stage chemistry. And that kind of reminded me of that Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga thing where they did one of those songs out of A Star Is Born on the stage. And everyone was like, oh my God, those guys are going to hook up. And they're both like, we are both happily married. And then since that time, both of them are now divorced.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah, nah, mate. Well, I mean, look, if you're obviously in love with June.
Yeah, well, talking about being a dick to their wife, what about being a dick to your future wife and proposing to her on stage when she said repetitively no?
Yes.
And then basically, like, peer pressuring her into saying yes on stage. That for me was like, oh, a part of me was like, I hope this isn't fucking real. And
it's
I haven't looked it up.
No, it is. It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
It really happened.
I don't know if it happened in that exact way. I went to try and see the clip because I thought, well, maybe it was videoed. But apparently he just stopped in the middle of a song and said, will you marry me? And she blushed and stuff, but then she was like, yes, okay. And then they hugged and it was all good. But actually that makes me think of your comment on the last movie, The Holiday, you know, just don't do a public, you know, massive big gesture like that when the other person is not necessarily going to respond favorably.
Ben Affleck did the same thing in Gone Girl, proposed to her at a party that she hated in front of all of her friends.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, why do people do this? Why do guys think this is a good idea?
Oh, all of these proposals, like, yeah, don't propose in front of her family or like all her friends or whatever, unless you're 100% sure that A, she's going to say yes, and B, she likes the idea of being like the center of attention, and a lot of people don't. So
yeah, no, like that's why I proposed to Stacey in a very private place, which was the top of Mount Maunganui, where we had people wandering past, wondering why that woman was sitting on a bench crying. and a guy was kneeling in front of her, which was pretty obvious. And so a girl took a photo for us, which was quite nice.
That's nice. It's not quite the same, I don't think, like as doing it in like with an entire audience watching.
Yeah.
Like that's not the same.
It was Stacey's favourite place to get something on her finger. So yeah, she was pretty happy.
What?
To get a ring on her finger. What are you thinking of?
I have no idea. I felt like you were trying to insinuate something that I just did not pick up.
That was a weird...
I'm totally trying to make you guys feel awkward right now.
Yeah, anyway. I feel awkward.
I'm just more confused, okay? Yeah.
Perfect. Cool. Mm-hmm. What have you got anyway, Stacey?
I am going with the dad. We need to mention him because he needs to get over some stuff, clearly. So I actually think it was a dick move of him to be so hard on Johnny at that Thanksgiving dinner. So just so mean to him across the table. He could have A, taken that out of the room, or B, just like, be happy. Your son is cleaning himself up. He's kind of trying to do the right thing. He's not quite there yet, but come on, man.
I was like, if you were a decent dad, you'd be like, hey, I see that you've got that tractor in some trouble. Should we go out down there and get it out of there together?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
let me help you. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about the dad later on.
Personal questions. You're back at it, Stace. What's your three questions?
Oh, yay. Okay. As I have said before, there's just so much emotional investment in many different relationships in this film. So what scene took the biggest yank on your heartstrings?
It was the moment when he wakes up from his withdrawal, when he's sort of finally clean. And she's sitting there chatting to, like talking to him, and he calls her an angel. Like, I just, that was his moment of absolute rock bottom, absolute vulnerability, and her kindness in that scene. I just thought, yeah, that's really beautiful, and it made me cry.
Aww.
Made you cry?
Yeah, I cry a bit at movies occasionally.
She doesn't have a heart of stone.
Only when it comes to the patriarchy.
Men, yeah.
Yeah. Why are you so surprised?
Males. My one was just the ending. You know, like, you knowing what I know, which is that they were so madly in love with each other, he recorded an album which was effectively his epitaph in a lot of ways. He basically recorded an album full of incredibly sad songs, and then she died, and then he just followed after her 4 months later, and they just basically have that sort of epilogue where it's like, you know, like, hardly ever do you see two people who are so obviously meant to be in love with each other and meant to be together with each other, which is what this film is. And when she finally says yes, as much of a dick move as it is, when she finally realizes, yeah, fuck it, I actually do love this man. And then, you know, the fact that we see them happy and all that sort of stuff, that was like the bit for me at the end where I was like,
It was so
nice. You guys, so late in the day, I was like,
you're saying the most biggest. There's a lot throughout this film.
I know, that, like his brother dying. Oh my God.
Yeah, no, I was like, oh, you're goody two shoes. Go and get the fuck out. No, I wasn't really.
Okay, that takes me to my next question. So Johnny fictitiously sang that he shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. What unsuspecting musician do you think has actually killed someone?
It's Moby. He's got a super creepy vibe.
That was my answer when Stacey said this question. I was like, it's just Moby.
Holy shit. What is the odds? There's just something about him. I'm just like, you're weird.
Why would a vegan kill somebody?
Because he's got no problem. He's got problems with killing animals. He's got no problems
someone
killing
like
humans.
Had a barbecue right over the road, and he was like, "You fucking killed too many animals. You're going down, bitch." Yeah.
How many animals can I save by murdering this one human? That's what he's thinking.
I think it's just something about white bald men. They're just super creepy. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've been responsible for the genocide of over a billion chickens by this point in my life. So somebody would probably want to murder me. Yeah. But you're missing the right answer. The right answer is Celine Dion.
How so?
I don't trust her.
I just don't trust her.
I don't trust her. She's got shifty eyes.
You trust every other singer.
No. I'm not saying I trust every other singer. I'm just, there's something about Celine Dion. I reckon, yeah. Anyway, my heart will go on. What's your next question, sir?
Okay, and my final question is, I love this question. I think it would work so well.
Yeah, you love
this
question.
What character would you have replaced with a talking dog?
Do we have the same answer, Liz?
I don't know.
I feel like there's a very obvious answer, and if you haven't picked that answer, then you suck.
Rude. I'm going with Elvis, because the casting would have been just as shit if you made him a talking dog. I just felt it was a really shit cast. for Elvis. I felt like you could have done so much better. And look, I actually kind of like that guy. Like he's, I can't remember his name, but he's in One Tree Hill. And I quite liked him in that show. But I just, yeah, nah. Well, I couldn't even work it out that it was Elvis to begin with. I was just like, oh, he's meant to be Elvis. Nah.
So he is the obvious answer. And what sort of dog would you have got to replace him with?
Oh, of course. Yes. He's going to be a dash hound. No, I'm joking. He's going to be a hound dog.
He ain't going to be nothing but a hound dog crying all the time. Of course you're going to have Elvis. It makes too much sense.
Funny. I didn't even think of that. But yeah. No, but I do like that I said he was going to be a dash hound just because that would piss you off.
Yeah, it would. It would be. He ain't nothing but a hound dog crying all the time.
Nothing but a hound dog.
Exactly.
Crying
there we go.
All the time.
Anyways, that moves me over to the first of my personal questions. And as somebody who is now artistic, we've mentioned my book a couple of times, quite often what spurs us on, what gives us creativity, what gets our juices flowing is we pull from tragic shit that's happened to us during our lives and use that to motivate us. I want to know from you guys, what percent of the world's art and performance, etc., do you guys think comes from a negative place, e.g. heartbreak, tragedy, etc.?
I think it's really high, like about 95%, something in that region. Because yes, okay, like if you're talking about art as in songs, writing, actual like visual arts, whatever other arts.
Well, like
there
movies, music, art, all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of it will be triggered by something negative.
I saw an amazing interview with Jerry Seinfeld once where he said, "I'm the only stand-up comedian I know of that doesn't have a fucked up upbringing."
He's part of the 5%.
Yeah, he's part of the 5%.
Yeah, I was pretty much in agreement. I went with 90% because most strong emotions are negative. Like if you have to describe strong emotions, really, you've got happy, that's your positive. But when you're negative, you've got anger, you've got fear, you've got shame, you've got guilt. Like there's so many really strong negative emotions. And I feel like, you know, this creation process can provide a way to work that pain out and get it out and process it. So it totally makes sense. I mean, when you think about any storylines, there's always something, even if you're talking about love, which theoretically is this beautiful, positive thing, there's still a lot of pain that goes into love, like long term. Yeah. So
I'd say in my experience from meeting stand-up comedians, musicians, filmmakers, all that sort of shit, I'd say if you asked all of them, like, what inspired you to do this, it's a desperate sense of proving yourself worth. So it's like it's that negative shit that's happened, like whether you had a fucked up upbringing or whatever, that you've actually wanted to go out and prove yourself by doing something that people adore and love and all that sort of shit. Like you'd very rarely get someone who's like, oh yeah, I had a fucking perfectly normal life and now here I am.
Michael McIntyre, I feel like he'd be positive.
Yeah, someone like him. I feel like Steven Spielberg. I feel like he's probably like just a normal dude. And then with music, I feel like Celine Dion's a pretty normal woman, but she just murders people.
Yeah. That doesn't tie
I'm just
together.
Kidding, Celine. Please don't come for me. So my next question, I can't wait for this because Liz loves to sing. Stacey doesn't. I want to hear you guys tell me what your favorite Johnny Cash song is, but you guys have to tell me by singing a line of it in the style of his voice.
Oh, that's
so
fine. I want to
hear you get deep and low and sing like
already.
Johnny Cash.
So here we go. I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling round the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to... And that's where I lose it, because it goes too low. He gets too deep.
I'm down
a
sand and on.
That was good.
As somebody who's won a singing competition and beat out 50 other entrants by singing that song, yes, it's my favourite.
That's amazing. We should have just sung the whole song together. Let's do that.
No.
Yeah, do it, guys, and then forget about me.
Yeah. We're trying to keep this podcast short. What
I was
going to
suggest that you just sang with me and I just sing really loud and drown you out if you want.
Okay. I fell into a burning real fire.
And it burns, birds as the flames go higher. I thought
that was nowhere near as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I thought you were going to be terrible. That was perfectly acceptable until you burst into laughter, like in the middle of a very emotional song.
Traumatic.
Listeners, she tried that once today, and our daughter pissed herself laughing in her face. It was like, "Mum's trying to sound like Dad."
I'm sorry, I just can't do anymore.
That was amazing. You don't need
beautiful.
To. That was it.
That was all we needed.
Okay, thank you for that, guys. That was absolutely outstanding. I'm sure Johnny Cash is not rolling over in his grave. I'm sure he's standing up and applauding.
I'm sure.
Anyway, moving over to my last question. as we have discussed, his wife puts up with a hell of a lot of grief from being in a relationship with this man. I don't know from you guys, at what point would you guys have just left him? Would have said, nah, we're done, I'm out.
I think it was when he made her sing on a podcast.
Anyway.
Okay, the real answer.
Have you got another answer?
Yeah. The minute that he was clear, the minute that it was clear that he was in love with June, that's it. As soon as you can tell that he's in love with another woman, just bail. Because they're not, it's not like he's in love with her, but then he's never going to see her again. Bloody performing every night on the tour. Like, just get yourself out of there, sister. That is not a fun time for you.
Yeah, I went round in circles on this answer because my first reaction was similar to yours, or maybe even sooner. Like, yeah, as soon as you know, it's not working. But in reality, I've just gone with pretty much around the same time that she did in the movie, because you've got to think about the societal constraints at the time. Like we've mentioned earlier, divorce was frowned upon, and she was just trying to do a good thing, raise his kids. So it would have taken, you would have wanted to hang on and try and make it work and see if something would change.
All right. Well, as we've just said, you know, society was a bit of a bitch back then. You know, women couldn't get divorced, etc. I'm wondering what you think would have been the worst thing about living in that era.
I'm going to go with a funny answer because, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that was pretty horrible back then. I want to try and keep the podcast light.
The overt racism and whatnot, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, overt, all that sort of shit. You know, lack of gay rights, you know, like civil rights, etc. Ton of other shit. So I'm just going to say the food.
Really?
Yeah. They just boiled shit. That's all they ate was boiled shit.
Way less high fructose corn syrup, though.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. It was
so
probably healthier.
Really healthy.
And they didn't have obesity. But still, like, they weren't blending spices. They weren't doing shit that I'm going to pretend like I sound like I know what I'm talking about. I can't wait for my episode of Eli's Kitchen where I'm like, okay, we get chicken and we fry it. And that's the episode done. Goodbye.
And this is the guy who doesn't care about food. Like, he could just eat the same meal every day, day in and day
out.
But
when you want occasional, pasta or, like, you know, a nice beef rendang curry. Like, we're not talking massively fancy here, but...
No, exactly. I do care. At the same time, like, there would have been no options like that back then.
Nah.
You know, like, your standard meal was, like, you know, what, meat and three veg. Like, that's all you would eat every night.
Boiled taters.
I wouldn't be going down to Mexico to get drugs. I'd be going down there to get
food.
Get some Mexican spicy food, basically.
They'd be like, what are you bringing back over the border, sir? And you'd be like, spices. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm bringing spices. And they're like, is that a code word? And you're like, no. And it's literally spices.
I need flavor in my life.
I'm going to tell you now, Mr. Customs Officer, I have about 17 kgs of guacamole inside my guitar.
He's like, you didn't actually have to put that in you. You could have just, like, carried that in. That's not illegal. And you'd be like, wow, this discomfort is really for nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Not to mention the other 5 kgs that I'm hiding about my person. This is very awkward.
That's a lot of guac.
It is.
What about you?
I've already mentioned it, but I think it's just some of those judgments that you would face, and it just seemed like a time where you had a little bit less free will, or the free will that you had, you know, if you went against the Bible and good Christian values, that you would be frowned upon or ousted from the group. It just seems very constraining.
For sure, like, especially as a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially as a woman, like, how judgy were those people in the shop that were like, oh, June Carter. Oh, your parents are good folk. It's a shame you've strayed so far.
I'm surprised they still talk to you.
You're an abomination.
Yeah,
like, divorce is an abomination. I'd be
divorce is an abomination.
Your face is an abomination. Suck it.
Exactly.
Mic drop. But yeah.
Pretty sure it says not to judge people in the Bible, so congratulations, sinner.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. I could talk for so long about how, like, all that Westboro Baptist Church and shit that you see now is just...
Yes, okay. No.
Let's we could do that on a different podcast, perhaps. On this one, I'll move to question 18. I'm curious, how does he afford that amazing house in the woods when he couldn't even, like, keep his phone on? That really confused me.
Okay, here's the thing, Liz. Like, celebrities are just better people than you and me, okay? So they deserve to have houses given to them, all right?
So he just turned up and went, hey, look, I'm actually Johnny Cash. I quite like this house. And they were like, oh, do you want to just have this house then? And he was like, that'd be great, thanks.
No, it was Nick Cage at the bank giving out money, throwing notes over the counter.
There's the answer.
He would make a terrible bank teller, to be fair, so I'm not surprised.
I
just found that whole thing bizarre. Like, one scene, he's like, I need to cash this check because I have no other way to live. Oh, yeah. But today I'm going to purchase this incredibly expensive house.
Yeah. My real answer is I agree with you, Liz. I did wonder the same thing. But then I think that people on drugs are just too unorganized. Maybe he had some money or some other checks lying around somewhere, but they just couldn't get to the bank or to... It was a weekend and the bank was
closed.
Or
like a term deposit or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just unorganized and they couldn't even work it out amongst themselves.
Given what happened with the global financial crisis, I almost feel like this is a running pattern for American banks where it's like, hey, I need to pay my phone bill. It's $40. No, you can't do that. Hey, I want to buy this house that's massively overpriced. Oh, here you go. Take a mortgage. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
we want to lend you hundreds of thousands of dollars that we know you can't pay back rather than $40 that we know you can't pay back.
Have you had that with credit cards? Like, I've applied for a credit card before. I'm like, yeah, I just want $3,000. They're like, we could give you $10,000. I'm like, cool. I don't want $10,000. Yeah. I only want three. And they're like, how about we split the difference? We'll give you five. I'm like, fuck's sake.
That happened to me in the UK. I'd literally been there for 3 weeks and they tried to give me a £10,000 credit card.
And I
didn't even have a job yet. I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with this?
It's insane.
Global financial crisis happened about a year after I got to the UK.
Speaking of assholes, having worked in the banking industry in London for quite some time, I definitely worked with a few. So I can recognise one in Johnny Cash's dad. So my question number 19 is, why is Johnny Cash's dad such an asshole?
Because the wrong son died.
Yeah, but get over it, bro. It's been a good few years, mate. You've still got a son. He's doing quite well.
The thing I got from this, and I don't know, maybe I'm going to talk about my own personal experience or whatever, but like he looks at Johnny and he just sees someone that just likes fucking around. And so when the son died, he was fucking around fishing. Like, he didn't know the whole story of what happened. And then when he's at his house, it's like, yes, he's become wildly more successful than the old man ever will be, but he's still fucking around. You know, he's just being an idiot. He's not being respectful and all that sort of shit. And he just doesn't seem like he appreciates where he's got to. Is it overkill? Yes. Is it probably what parents were like back then? Yes. Are there still parents around that are like that? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just like, it's just someone who's like busted his ass, worked hard for everything he has, expects respect from other people.
But he'd been a drunk as well, so it's not even like he was perfect.
Yeah, well, again, there's the other thing about projecting is just
That's what I was thinking, is that he wanted Johnny or his kids in general to be better than him.
I liked how he sort of came around at the end.
Yeah, he was doing better. I thought that was a really sweet scene with the tin cans.
With the grandkids and the flood. And stuff. Yeah. Moves us down to our final question, which is also a listener question, one that we've threw out there to you guys to answer for us. There's been a ton of biopics, like musical biopics, in the past 20 years, and I want to know from you guys which one was your favourite. I feel like this is pointless with somebody sitting beside me who's just given a movie a hyperbole sandwich, so I'm pretty sure we know what your answer is.
Oh yeah, definitely Walk the Line. This is the best.
Do you have a runner-up?
I'm not sure if it's categorised as a biopic, if it's like a documentary style.
Yeah, sure.
Amy?
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's
Amy
a good
Winehouse.
Call.
Fascinating. Fascinating life. I'm not really judging it from is this a good movie documentary, but just fascinating story.
Yeah, that was good. That's a real good choice. Holy shit. Fuck, you're throwing me for a loop.
Yeah, I'm going in the same theme of strong British female biopics. I'm picking Spice World.
No,
I'm really not. I just thought of that when you were talking, and I was like, I've got to say that. No, clearly I'm not.
Emily Higgins wanted to pick Spice World, but she's like, it doesn't really count. It's not from the last 20 years. I was like, don't you dare.
Yeah, actually, I was like, oh, is that too? It wouldn't even be in the last 20 years. I'm like, it doesn't count either anyway, but I just thought it'd be funny to throw that in. No, my real answer is I was thinking this one originally, but actually I think I'm going to go with 8 Mile.
Is it a biopic? It is. It's from 2003, but it's not. It's like
it's
a
same
loose
sort of,
adaptation.
Yeah.
Very loose adaptation.
I Googled biopics to see what they were, and it came up. So that's what I'm picking. It's that or Spice World. I don't care.
Yeah, my one is, it's a toss-up between Walk the Line and Straight Outta Compton. I loved Straight Outta Compton. Talking about, you know, like very challenging young men who are trying to make a name for themselves and come out of what they, you know, their situation and become more than they are. And it was just phenomenal, like, because NWA, like, the story, that's just this whole new style of rap music, of singing gangster rap, you know, they pretty much invented the genre. At least they made the, like, genre popular, and then came out and actually told the true story of how these five guys, you know, took on the world and then eventually took on each other. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I've seen that. It was good.
Yeah.
It was great, actually. I found it very confronting.
It was. It was not something that you knew much about.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it, so it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Different world, eh? Different lives.
Yeah.
To us. Yeah.
So I threw it out there to you guys, our dear listeners, to answer for us, and looking at the results, Walk the Line 1 got 39% of the vote.
Wow.
Coming in at second was Straight Outta Compton. Bohemian Rhapsody came in at third at 26%.
Yeah.
I've heard
mixed reviews. I never went to see it because it got such mixed reviews.
Oh, you should see it, Liz. It's good. That's up there for me.
I was about to get a Netflix as well copyright infringement notice and say it's fine. So I'm just going to pretend like I'm not saying that because I'm not allowed to, otherwise I get sued. Coming in at last was Ray with 7% of the vote, which I think is unbelievable given that Jamie Foxx won a Oscar for it. I think that's a really underrated film.
Maybe less people have seen it. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's really good. See, anyway, we had a bit of feedback to the answer, which I'm going to run through. Paul from the Countdown Podcast. Countdown Podcast is awesome. They had me on recently. He's running through his top 100 films of all time, and I was there for films 61 to 70. So check that out if you want to hear what my 61st to 70th favorite film of all time is. Random numbers to pick, but yeah. Paul said, never seen Walk the Line. Need to sort that out, bro. So I might struggle with this ep, which means it's Straight Outta Compton for me. M from Verbal Diorama, one of our favourite friends, basically said, Walk the Line is great, but Rocket Man should be up there instead of Bohemian Rhapsody. And good old Nick, he commented and said, yes, completely agree. Very true. Rocket Man's really good.
I haven't seen Rocket Man.
I have actually heard it's good, I think.
Completely changed my opinion on Elton John as a result of that movie. Holmes Movie said, Ray is very underrated. Control is another great and underrated music biopic. That's a good point. Good old Tara Maholic. We love Tara. She picked next week's episode, actually. She picked Roadhouse for me, Mucho, and Kahu to do next week. Can't wait. So this is too old, but I love this movie back in the day. And she just put a gif of La Bamba. I love La Bamba.
Sweet.
Back in the late 80s. It was awesome. Renegade said The Dirt. That was another awesome film. All about Motley Crue that's on Netflix. Next up, Unpaid Programming Podcast said, this is the only acceptable answer, and put a gif of Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
No.
Have you not? Okay, it's a spoof piss take of this movie. It's fucking awesome. Nick Haskins again said, this is Rocketman Erasure and I won't stand for it. To which I replied, it's almost like I pick one and leave out one that I know will get this reaction. It's almost like hate fuels me. It's almost like Haskins' hate is the most delicious morsel.
Poor Nick Haskins.
Poor Nick Haskins. The Cinema Guys said, anything but Bohemian Rhapsody.
Ooh.
Correct.
Wow.
Fuzzy Dan from Shaker Not Nerd. Shaker Not Nerd is another awesome podcast you guys should be listening to. These guys were on our Point Break episode. Basically put a gif of Connor for real and said, Popstar, never stop, never stopping.
Yes! I changed my mind. That is my number one answer. 100% yes. I love Andy Samberg. I love that film. Oh my God, it's so good.
It's so good. Easily in my top 10 comedies from the last 10 years or whatever.
Can we do that as a podcast?
I already have. Damn it. Kate Naylor said, I feel like The Dirt on Netflix is underrated and a hidden biogem. Again, the Motley Crue one. Absolutely agree. Contrarian said, voting Bohemian Rhapsody just to get Nikolai's kitchen out of his peaceful zen cooking environment and into the dark side for a moment. Titus Banks said, hello, and put a gif of Rocketman. Agree. And Daniel B said Rocketman as well. Good answers, guys. Rocketman seems to have...
Yeah, popular.
Probably should have replaced Ray, given how little votes Ray got, or any comments around it, aside from one. But, yeah, anyway, there we go.
Now you know.
Anywho, that takes us down to the end. Thank you, Stacey, for coming on and talking about your most watched movie after Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. No problem at all. I actually was happy to do it.
Yeah. We listeners, we actually played a game with Stacey where I said, me and Liz have decided what movie we're going to do. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Let's just sit down and watch it. And I skipped through the credits and shit and got it all set up. And then when Stacey walked in the room, I was like, this is the movie. I just want to see how long it's going to take you before you guess it. Literally two shots in. She's like, is this Walk the Line? I was like,
nice.
Stacey remembered something about a movie that she hadn't watched in a while. I'm amazed. Yes.
Well, that's
and
fair.
Thank you to Liz. Hope you had a good time as well, Liz.
Oh, yeah. Look, it wasn't as hideously painful as I expected. You know, having a look at your face for 2 hours, but, you know, we did okay. But it's been great hanging out with Stacey, as it always is.
You must have hated the day they invented mirrors, Liz.
Are you saying that I'm not a beautiful woman? Because I think that's clear that you're wrong.
As I mentioned, next week is Roadhouse. This is courtesy of Tara Maholic. Thank you, Tara. Can't wait to do that. That'll be me, Mucho, and Kahu throwing 20 questions at the 1989. Some would say classic. Stacey would say, what the fuck is this movie you're making me watch?
Yes, Tara, I have ended up watching this movie. So
you enjoyed it more than you're letting on, you liar. You absolute liar.
It was shocking to say the least.
That's true. Anyway, if you want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Movie Reviews In, or you can find us on Facebook at Movie Reviews In 20Qs, or send us an email at mritqs@gmail.com. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. It truly means the world to us. And thank you again to our patrons as well. I mean, your money keeps the lights going. So, yeah, cheers. Anyway, that's thanks for me.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Thank you.
All I've heard is that Liz spends her Friday nights playing with three dudes, doing role plays
with
three guys.
God, I wish it was what you're insinuating.